Caitlin Clark, your director at Essential Workers for Democracy, put this in a national context. I mean, you have the broader immigrant workers movement, including places like Omaha, Nebraska, and also just this whole issue of the workplace conditions and how the immigrant crackdown affects their work every day.
Yeah, so JBS is one of the largest meatpacking companies in the world, and 5% of all beef consumed in the United States comes just from this JBS Greeley plant that's currently on strike. These workers literally feed America, and yet JBS has paid over $100 million in court settlements, legal fees, and fines in just the last year alone for illegal collusion with other meatpackers in the industry to repress worker wages and increase prices for consumers. And this is really a historic strike. These workers are standing up not just for their own plant, but for the meatpacking industry as a whole, which, as you mentioned, is an industry that employs predominantly immigrant workers. And what we saw at JBS when these workers took their strike authorization vote several weeks ago was that several immigration officers were stationed outside of the plant on that day. But these workers ultimately voted to authorize a strike by 99%. And being out on the picket line, it's just incredible to see workers from all around the world teaching each other chants in their languages, playing music together, dancing, sharing food. And it's really an incredible just picture of solidarity across the barriers that the meatpackers typically try to use to divide workers and prevent them from organizing.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Energy Trust of Oregon, empowering people throughout the region with energy-efficient solutions that can improve the comfort and safety of homes, businesses, and lives. More info at energytrust.org. Energy Trust of Oregon.
That's us.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland and Multnomah County leaders spar over the meaning of new homelessness data.
Unionized Portland Community College faculty ratify their agreement with the college.
And in national news, the Supreme Court hears the case against birthright citizenship.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. I'm G.
And I'm Terrence Burns. The newest data on homelessness in Portland shows the number of people who are living unsheltered in Multnomah County is almost 3,000 more people than a year ago. That's complicated news for Portland's Mayor Keith Wilson, whose central campaign promise was ending unsheltered homelessness in the city. Wilson has disputed the county's new numbers. In a city-county homelessness meeting in February, Wilson said, quote, "We're messaging that unsheltered homelessness is increasing, but we're not seeing it on the street. We're not seeing it with our eyes," end quote. Typically, the county relies on point-in-time count of unsheltered residents performing each year on a night in January. But experts have long considered that an undercount of the true population this year, the county data added a collection based on anyone who encountered homelessness services throughout the year. That includes staying in a shelter, interacting with an outreach worker, or moving into permanent housing. Together, that puts a county total around 8,800 residents sleeping unsheltered every night. When Wilson took office, it was closer to 6,000. Wilson and his staff have disputed the numbers, saying the county could be inflating the numbers by double counting people who give fake names. They also say people could be using homeless services who aren't homeless. A staff made slideshow with these theories, and it did not provide evidence. OPB reports that city and county staff have exchanged dueling PowerPoints on the data. In public records, County Homeless Service Department Director Anna Plum wrote to Wilson's staff saying of Wilson, quote, "Nothing he is saying is true," end quote. Portland and Multnomah County have teamed up to address homelessness in the region since 2016, but it's been a tense relationship in recent years. Both local governments are facing significant budget shortfalls this year. That could mean cutting 2,000 shelter beds across the region to fill the gap.
The future of the name Cesar Chavez on prominent Portland street signage and a school building is currently up for debate. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson says he's open to the discussion. Portland City Council Candace Avalos says she's searching social media to research public opinion. And Portland Public Schools says they need significant public engagement to make a change to one of their buildings. In March, it was reported that civil rights leader and Chicano labor organizer Cesar Chavez sexually abused women and girls. The push for the name removal from public spaces across the nation and Portland was swift. Currently, there are more than 100 streets, schools, and other public spaces in the U.S. that changed their names to honor Chavez. Locally, Cesar E. Chavez Boulevard runs roughly 7 miles through northeast and southeast Portland. That roadway, formerly known as 39th Avenue, was renamed in 2010. At the time, that process faced significant pushback from local residents and citizen activists. For several years, local municipalities across the U.S. celebrated Chavez's March 31st birthday with parades, proclamations, and other events. In Oregon, all planned events memorializing the day were canceled. The New York Times published a 5-year investigation that highlighted the extensive and shocking allegations that Chavez assaulted and raped women and girls while leading the United Farm Workers Union. Following the allegations, Portland Public School District sent a letter to families of Cesar Chavez Middle School. PPS officials say, quote, "The process for renaming a school is a long one that requires months of careful planning and intensive engagement, as well as board approval. I can assure you that whatever direction we take, it will be in service of our students, and we will not proceed without your input and involvement," end quote.
On March 11th, Portland Community College's academic and employees unions voted to strike. Since then, both unions reached a tentative agreement following mediation. Upon ratification, the faculty union agreed to the compensation increase of 2% in year one and 3% in year two. PCC's staff union, the Federation of Classified Employees, agreed to a similar contract with the college last week. Lost wages due to the strike will be paid retroactively in lump sums. Full-time faculty were expected to return to work Tuesday with winter term grades due by 8 p.m. today. Part-time faculty are expected to complete winter term work and prepare for spring term this week. However, union members must still approve the deal in a ratification vote before teachers can go back to work. Voting began yesterday at 8 a.m.
No, this is not an April Fool's joke. A pencil will be running for governor of Oregon. Jay Schuberth, a former teacher at Portland State University's General Education Program, announced their bid for governor on March 31st. Schuberth's campaign aims to raise awareness about the state's reading proficiency issues. Oregon's 4th and 8th graders scored in the bottom half of all states in reading proficiency for the 2025 National Assessment for Educational Progress. States like Mississippi, Colorado, and Louisiana have modernized their literacy curriculum, mandating specific reading programs be used in schools and requiring new teachers test on the science of reading to obtain their licenses. Shoeberth's using the pencil pulpit to advocate curriculum overhauls and teacher training here in Oregon. The pencil's hope is to make education the biggest issue in the governor's race. Oregon law requires the candidate to be human, but Oregonians who are inclined to can write in pencil on their primary ballot.
The NBA Board of Governors unanimously approved the sale of the Portland Trail Blazers yesterday to Dallas billionaire and subprime auto loan magnate Tim Dundon. The sale is actually a two-part deal, with the first installment closing Tuesday, March 31st. The second installment will close no later than September 1st, 2028, according to league sources. Jody Allen, co-founder and president of the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation, put the team up for sale following the death of her brother, Paul Allen, in 2018. Dundon is the current owner of the National Hockey League's Carolina Hurricanes. The Trailblazers are currently in ninth place in league standings and likely to make the play-in to determine the final two spots in the NBA's 2026 playoffs.
President Donald Trump signs an executive order restricting mail-in voting. SCOTUS decides to end Colorado's LGBTQ conversion therapy ban. And the Iran war reaches a turning point. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think this will help a lot with elections. We'd like to have voter ID. We'd like to have proof of citizenship, and that'll be another subject for another time.
As his strict nationwide voter ID bill fails in the Senate, President Donald Trump is signing an executive order restricting mail-in voting. It tells Homeland Security and the Social Security Administration to list U.S. citizens verified to vote in each state, threatens states that don't follow the lists with losing federal funds, and calls for the Postal Service to send absentee ballots only to those voters. Courts have ruled it's unconstitutional and illegal for the federal government to try to dictate how elections are run. Watchdogs are vowing to sue. Trump has long argued falsely that mail-in voting is rife with fraud and voter ID is necessary because of non-citizen voting, which almost never happens. The Save America Act he supports would make mail-in ballots much harder to get, even though they're popular and problem-free in Republican-led states like Utah and Arizona. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court says a Colorado ban on LGBTQ conversion therapy is unconstitutional, agreeing with the Christian Youth Therapists, bringing the suit that the law restricts free speech. Half of states have similar bans that could end up being overturned. Angela DeLauro with GLAAD says no one even argued that conversion therapy works.
Conversion practices are proven to be dangerous and have been discredited for decades, not only because they're ineffective, but because those who undergo it suffer devastating harm to their relationships with family and with their faith communities.
With the Iran war in its fifth week, the administration may be set to send in ground troops, even as Trump publicly says he's ready to end the conflict. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Kane, says Iran should look for a diplomatic solution because the U.S. is ready to escalate.
The range of military options those forces can offer are extensive, not just limited to what you mentioned in terms of forces on the ground.
Several media outlets report the White House is considering giving up trying to reopen the vital Strait of Hormuz, even while Iran continues to attack shipping and its Gulf Arab neighbors. TSA agents are getting paid with funds already appropriated to the Department of Homeland Security. The legality of that has not been tested. The Senate did pass an agency budget funding everything but immigration enforcement, but Speaker of the House Mike Johnson countered with a clean 8-week extension. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says if Johnson had allowed a vote on the Senate bill, it would have passed overwhelmingly.
To end the Trump Republican shutdown of the Department of Homeland Security, make sure TSA agents are paid. Stand up for FEMA, for the Coast Guard, and for our cybersecurity professionals. And stop inconveniencing Americans.
A federal judge has blocked further construction of Trump's White House ballroom without congressional approval. That's unlikely given Democratic opposition. A different federal judge also blocked an executive order repealing funding from National Public Radio and the public broadcasting system. That will have little effect since Congress blocked their money in last year's budget mega bill. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A Supreme Court decision that could upend California's ban on conversion therapy for minors is drawing fierce criticism from LGBTQ+ advocates. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Groups that advocate for the LGBTQ plus community are slamming Monday's Supreme Court decision overturning a Colorado law banning conversion therapy for minors. Justice Neil Gorsuch argued for the majority that the bill violated therapists' First Amendment free speech rights. Jorge Reyes-Salinas with Equality California says conversion therapy, which tries to change a person's sexual orientation or gender identity, hurts patients by fostering self-loathing.
Every major medical and mental health organization continues to condemn conversion therapy because of its harmfulness. It creates depression, anxiety, and suicide.
20 states, including California, ban conversion therapy for minors. This Supreme Court decision doesn't lift those bans immediately, but it does make them vulnerable to legal challenge. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson argued in her dissent that states should be able to regulate professional conduct in the medical field without running afoul of the First Amendment. Angela Dallara with the nonprofit advocacy group GLAAD says we need to prioritize people's right to effective, science-based medical care.
We must amplify the voices of survivors and continue to hold liable anyone who peddles in this junk science. Conversion practices are also very much a form of medical malpractice and consumer fraud because they don't work.
In California, adults can sue for medical malpractice if they believe they have been harmed by conversion therapy. A new bill in the state legislature, Senate Bill 934, would make it easier to sue and extends the time limit for filing a suit. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jake Thomas on his new piece titled Treated and Trapped, patients with a unique legal status remain stuck at the Oregon State Hospital for months as a shortage of community beds and bureaucratic delays stall their exit. At 6, it's PDX Progressive Talk Radio. Then at 7, stick around for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, expect clouds with a few showers, overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow, look for clouds and an afternoon high of 56. Today in history, April 1st, 1908, is the birthday of American psychologist Abraham Maslow. He introduced the concept of the hierarchy of needs, a theory that has a profound influence on the understanding of human motivation and personal development. The quote of the day is from Abraham Maslow, who said, quote, "I can feel guilty about the past, apprehensive about the future, but only in the present can I act. The ability to be in the present moment is a major component of mental wellness," end quote.
A federal court ordered the Trump administration to restore over $1 billion of federal emergency management agency grants last week. The court deemed FEMA unlawfully terminated the grant program and ordered the agency to restart it. With that story and more is Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. The Federal Emergency Management Agency last week opened $1 billion in grants for disaster management. The news comes after the agency terminated the program for that work a year ago. But a federal court found that termination unlawful and ordered the agency to restart it. Aliona Nyden with the Alaska Desk has more on what that means for some tribes in Alaska.
FEMA opened applications for a program to help communities protect themselves from fires, floods, earthquakes, and hurricanes. The agency canceled the program last year. But a federal judge in the U.S. District of Massachusetts ordered that the agency reinstate the funding. Dustin Ivan is Tribal Resilience Coordinator for the village of Quiguilangoc in western Alaska, one of the villages hit hardest by the ex-Typhoon Halong. The village participated in the FEMA program before it was canceled. Ivan says it is still unclear how useful the new version of the program will be for Alaska villages like his.
There's good news. But we'll see how it goes. So a lot of these grants don't really fit our rural Alaska villages.
Last spring, FEMA canceled its program called Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities, also known as BRIC. The agency called it wasteful, ineffective, and too concerned with political agendas. 20 states sued FEMA in response. Quiguilangoc residents for years have been working to protect themselves from flooding and erosion and voted to relocate several years ago. In 2022, the village was accepted into the BRIC program to select a relocation site. Village leaders also applied for another BRIC grant to do a feasibility study for the site, but the program was canceled.
We were all devastated. It was like a year and a half of work all down the drain.
FEMA said BRIC has a few changes following the order to relaunch. The agency said it will eliminate phased projects, funding for hazard mitigation planning, and technical assistance provisions, the very things that tribes like Quiguilangoc applied for in the past. Yvonne says he's concerned that the agency is not planning to do phased projects.
Alaska has four seasons, and we can only do summer to freeze-up projects. The project we were planning was going to be a multi-year and in phases.
The application for the program is open until late July. In Anchorage, I am Alona Knighton.
A new partnership between journalism and legal experts aims to improve how stories are reported across Indian country. The Indigenous Journalists Association and the Center for Indigenous Law and Justice at UC Berkeley School of Law announced a national collaboration this week focused on strengthening coverage of Native nations. The effort will provide journalists with training in federal Indian law, tribal sovereignty, and best practices for reporting in Native communities. Mary Lopez Kiefer, Executive Director of the Center of Indigenous Law and Justice, said in a joint statement announcing the partnership, quote, "By working together, we can ensure that reporting on Indian country is grounded in legal accuracy, cultural respect, and a deeper understanding of tribal governance." Leaders say many of the most important issues in Indian country, like missing and murdered Indigenous people, water rights, and child welfare, are shaped by complex legal systems that are often misunderstood. Organizers say the collaboration will include workshops, webinars, and national training opportunities aimed at improving the accuracy and integrity of reporting on Native nations. I'm Jill Freitas.
Parents and advocates in Wisconsin and across the country are pushing for new laws after a landmark verdict found Meta and Google liable for a woman's childhood social media addiction. The ruling, seen as a major precedent that could hold tech platforms accountable as defective products. As Judith Ruiz Branch reports, lawmakers in Wisconsin are currently considering stronger state-level safeguards to keep children safe online.
Parents and advocates in Wisconsin and across the country are demanding legislation be passed to ensure social media safeguards for children. This comes after a landmark verdict last week found Meta and Google liable for a woman's childhood social media addiction. At a recent press conference, bereaved parents like Victoria Hank shared how social media experiences harmed their children. She emphasized that the recent verdict against tech giants Meta and Google proves they made conscious decisions to harm children for profit, and parents are not to blame.
This is a victory and we all feel vindicated, but it has to be coupled with legislation, because this could just be like, okay, this is just the cost of doing business, and then they go back to doing it.
Advocates are calling on Congress to pass the Kids Online Safety Act, which mandates a duty of care for online platforms to prevent mental health harms and sexual exploitation. Wisconsin lawmakers are considering similar state-level legislation as part of a broader effort to introduce age-related restrictions and address addictive digital features. Jurors in a recent case in California agreed that both Meta and Google designed platforms like Instagram and YouTube to be addictive. The plaintiff's lawyers, Mark Lanier, stresses the ruling serves as validation for the generation of people who have been affected by social media harms. He says it also sets a major precedent for future cases.
We've sent a message with this that you will be held accountable regardless of whether the children are getting sent pornographic pictures, regardless of whether they're being sexploitated, just because of the features alone that drive addiction, these companies can be held accountable.
Both companies plan to appeal and deny that social media alone causes severe mental health issues, but Lanier says the ruling marks a significant shift toward treating these platforms as defective products and signals growing accountability for social media companies. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
What's greater, the number of executive orders Trump has had canceled or the number of unprecedented things he's done in office? Add to that second list attending a Supreme Court session, something no sitting president has ever done, out of respect for the separation of powers. Trump was in the court to hear oral arguments as the Solicitor General represented the case to stop birthright citizenship, the constitutional rule that says almost everyone born in the U.S. in America is an American citizen. The executive order, which the lower courts blocked and has never become law, would affect only babies born in the future. At the hearing, key conservative justices raised doubts about the constitutionality of the president's executive order. However, several of the court's conservative justices also asked tough questions of a lawyer for the American Civil Liberties Union, which brought the legal challenge. The order would deny citizenship to over 200,000 babies born every year in the U.S. to undocumented immigrants. The legal principle of birthright citizenship, which makes everyone born within the U.S. or its territories a citizen, has been widely interpreted as constitutional law since the 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. This is not the first time one of Trump's executive orders have come before the nation's highest court. The Supreme Court considered some of 24 emergency cases involving his administration's actions in 2025 alone and almost ruled in his favor.
President Trump signed an executive order to restrict mail-in voting and who is permitted to vote. As with most of his exceptive orders, lawsuits against it are expected. The order requires the Department of Homeland Security, working with the Social Security Administration, to make a list of eligible voters in each state. However, the Constitution gives control over elections to the states. The order also wants to bar the U.S. Postal Service from sending ballots to people on the approved list, but the White House probably does not have the power to tell the Postal Service what to do. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden characterized Trump's order as a desperate last-ditch effort by a failing president to suppress American votes. He said, "Oregonians have successfully voted by mail for 30 years, and will be damned if we let Donald Trump change the way our state runs its elections. My message to the White House is this: if you come for Oregon's vote by mail, you'll have hell to pay." Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield confirmed that the state would challenge the order. Oregon became the first state in the country to vote exclusively by mail, following a 1998 ballot measure, which has led to Oregon having one of the highest rates of voter turnout in the nation.
Experts say Washingtonians need more exercise, and today, National Walking Day, is a great time to start. Research shows exercise is critical to prevent heart disease and keep people independent as they age, and most people are not getting enough. Comments by Lindsay Olson, clinical exercise physiologist, Pulse Heart Institute. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Today is National Walking Day, and the American Heart Association is calling on Washingtonians to hit the ground walking for heart health and stress reduction. Research shows only 1 in 5 adults and teens get enough exercise to maintain good health. Clinical exercise physiologist Lindsay Olson says adults need 30 minutes a day of moderate intensity aerobic exercise, at least 5 days a week. If that feels like a stretch, she advises people to break the time into smaller pieces and build up.
You want to start feeling confident in your body again. You don't want to say, oh, if I can't do 30 minutes, I'm not going to exercise at all. Even starting with 5 or 10 minutes is great, and doing that several times during the day and then building up from there.
Olson recommends brisk walking for exercise because it works a lot of muscles at once and people can easily adjust the intensity and time. She says exercise has a positive impact on every risk factor for heart disease, including cholesterol levels, blood pressure, and lung strength. She adds as people age, regular exercise is key to maintaining independence. But Olson says exercise is not just important for physical health. Getting your blood pumping also relieves stress and supports mental health.
As you increase that heart rate, it's going to lower those cortisol levels. You're going to get these good endorphins. You're going to feel better when you exercise.
Research shows people who walk at least 5,000 steps a day had fewer symptoms of depression than those who don't. Olson adds, along with celebrating National Walking Day, now is a good time for people to register for a Washington Heart and Stroke Walk event this fall in Seattle, Spokane, or Tacoma. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants to vote now, while he's still allowed.
Over 30,000 people in Portland, millions across America protested the administration and the war. What's changed? Change takes time, and it's been a long time since any president attacked his own country and the people and institutions he represents as often and as intensely as Trump. It's what corporations do in hostile takeovers. The overtaker sells off profitable parts of the company, the way Trump has sold America's resources and citizens to maximize his family's and friends' wealth, something no other president has ever done. Trump has been very successful at creating profit and chaos. Chaos doesn't require planning, depends on not planning, just thrashing about, lawsuits, program cuts, name calling. Unlike on the old TV show, there's no one to tell Donnie, you're fired. Only us voters can do that, assuming we get to vote. Since Donnie's handlers know a democratically controlled Congress would be an emergency to their national control, he'll just have to stop everyone from voting. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 1st, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, G, Dave Johnson, Hannah Francis, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Jill Freitas, Edwin J. Vieira, Isabel Charlet, Judith Ruiz Branch, Suzanne Potter, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Gian Guanta. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support